Blog Talk Radio.
Well, good morning, and welcome to the Fly Girl Show. I am your host, Casey Grant, and Happy New Year to everyone out there. I hope that you had a wonderful holiday and a very exciting New Year. And I am starting off my show with a very, very exciting person that I think you're going to enjoy the show today. And once again, the show comes on every Wednesday from 11 to 12. So I hope that you will invite your family and your friends to call in. My guest call-in number is 347-857-3609. So I hope that you will feel free to call in, make a comment, or add something interesting to the comment to the show. My guest today is Karen Hotkins, and I would like to introduce you to her. She is the first female corporate pilot for Ford. Good morning, Karen. How are you?
Good morning, Casey. I am well.
Perfect, perfect. So this is exciting. I was, as you know, a flight attendant for 35 years, so I was at the other end of the aircraft.
Right.
And so to talk to someone that was in charge, a female, and what a wonderful thing for you. You also have an interesting story. You broke different barriers. And I'm sure at that point, too, it was about racism, too, because there was a lot of different things that were going on that for you to break through and become one of the first female pilots, corporate pilots for Ford.
Sure, there was still a lot of definitely gender discrimination going on and the racism, as you and I discussed the other day. I'm not black, but I sure did witness it among others that I had my career with.
Exactly, exactly. So what year did you start? And give us a little introduction about, did you always want to be a pilot? And what is your background? Was your father in the service or anything?
There's no flyers, no military service in my family whatsoever, and I came from fairly low income. I mean, we always had a roof over our head, but we were also the house that the fire department left food baskets at for Christmas and so forth. So, but anyway, fifth grade is when they sent the first man into space. And they made such a big deal out of it that they brought television sets into the classroom so that we wouldn't miss it. And I went home from watching that launch of John Glenn and said, I'm going to be an astronaut. And to my parents' credit, my father with an eighth grade education and a factory worker said, good for you, you can do that. This is America, you can be the president if you want, you know. So I never quite made it to astronaut, but I definitely pursued aviation. When I was 12, both of my brothers were in the Civil Air Patrol, and you had to be 13. And I used to tag along with them to the meetings, just waiting to be 13 so I could sign up. And finally, when I was 13, I signed up. I went to my first week-long summer encampment at Selfridge Air Force Base, and they selected the top two females and the top two males based on how many demerits or whatever you got during the week, and I happened to make the cut and got a ride in a T-33. So that's kind of launched all of my interest in aviation, and not having money, not even having the wherewithal to go to college, I was out of high school and just working a clerical job. And in 1970, I saw a newspaper ad from a fixed base operator flight school at Pontiac, Michigan Airport for a girl to work weekends as a receptionist in exchange for flying lessons.
Really?
And And I worked, every eight-hour day I worked was good for 1 hour of flying,
okay,
whether it be with or without an instructor. So so I was I worked a Saturday and Sunday as well as my regular job during the week to put a roof over my head, and I managed to get there, you know, 2 flying lessons a week. And I stayed with this fixed base operator until I had my private commercial ratings and eventually my CFI. And that was my first time I hit the brick wall as far as gender discrimination, because the man I had worked for all those years, a couple of years, would not hire me as a CFI because I was a woman.
Now, okay, now you're throwing out acronyms. Now, what is CFI?
I apologize. That's a certified flight instructor.
Okay.
So at that time, I'll try to be more careful of that. At that time, yeah, I got my flight instructor rating, but the man who I had worked with all the way through that owned the flight school and needed a flight instructor, another flight instructor, would not hire me. He said he just didn't think his clients would take to flying with a woman.
Now, what year are we talking about?
This is around 19... That would have been around 72 by the time I got my rating, 73.
Okay.
Do we have a call to pick up?
You know what? It's someone that's calling in for the show, but we'll allow them to put them on hold for a moment.
Okay.
So continue. Just continue.
So he wouldn't hire me, and I was just stunned. But I went down the other side of the field and found a tiny little operator, a gentleman named Howard Freed, that had a couple of airplanes and a couple of instructors, and he was also a certified FAA. Federal Aviation Administration examiner, and he hired me. And interesting story here, he left me alone to meet my first student. It was such a low-budget operation that he didn't have a receptionist, and he just took some of the students that were on the schedule and moved them over to my name, and in walks this 45-year-old man, and I'm sitting there in my early 20s with long straight hair down my back, and
yeah.
I said, "I'm your flight instructor." And he's like, "No, you're not. This is a joke." You know. So it took me a while to convince him that he was going to walk out to the airplane and do a walk around and fly with me, but we did that. And I also, you know, you and I talked the other day, and you told me how you considered military as a path, and I considered that at this point as well, not having a lot of money to advance my career and get advanced ratings. I went to the recruitment office to see about flying with the military. Well, of course, no women were flying with the military yet at that time.
Uh-huh.
And he said, why don't you join up and do something else for a while, because it's going to happen, and it's going to the first positions are going to be given to the women who are already in. You know, they're going to take priority. So why don't you join up? And so I'm like, okay, well, what could I do in the meantime? You could be a paratrooper. We do have female paratroopers, and I'm like, awesome. That sounds amazing, because all those years I was in Civil Air Patrol, all I wanted to do was jump out of an airplane. When I got that jet ride in the T-33, I had everything I could do not to push that red button that the pilot told me, don't push that unless I tell you to. That's the eject button, and I so wanted to eject. So anyway.
Let's digress just for a few moments. The T-33,
sure.
What type, explain that to the audience. How large of a plane? Is it a civilian, or is it military, or what
that's
is that?
That was military, because when we were in the Civil Air Patrol is a civilian arm of the Air Force. And
okay.
It's kind of like Boy Scouts or Girl Scouts, except you're a cadet, and you get to kind of play Air Force. And they do have the summer encampments at the Air Force bases. So I was at Selfridge Air Force Base, and the T-33, T stands for trainer. It's a little jet trainer with just two places, a tandem, the one behind the other,
okay.
And a canopy. And so yeah, they packed me all in, put a chute on me, and I'm like, oh, I hope we get to eject, because I always wanted to jump out of an airplane, you know. And he's like, don't you touch that red button. And it took everything not to push that red button. But
oh, my. Well, you had more adventure in your soul than I did. I never thought about becoming a pilot. I think it was part of my bucket list. I would like to take a few flying lessons. But I never had the desire. I really just wanted to do what I was doing. And then I guess maybe it was really kind of hampered because we were fighting to become flight attendants, so we surely didn't see any black pilots. So I guess that was a dream that wasn't at that time obtainable.
Right, that was certainly more out of your reach than out of mine, and it wasn't real easy for me as a white female. You had the black and the female going on. That I can't even imagine.
Well, I'm impressed with your adventurous soul, your adventurous spirit. I tell you,
right.
I never wanted to parachute. I never would do that. Now, have you ever done it since then? Have you parachuted before?
I have, but before we digress, let me finish this story with the recruitment officer, because,
okay, for sure.
He's like, yeah, you can be a paratrooper, and I said, awesome, I'm ready to roll here, and he says, yep, and you'll go to jump school, and you'll make 100 jumps, and then you'll be certified, and he said, but the only thing is, after that, you won't jump anymore, because women aren't allowed in military zones, war zones, and that's where all the jumping occurs. So I said, really? So what would I be doing after I made 100 jumps and got certified as a jumper? And he said, packing chutes.
Oh, no.
So I laughed and went out the door, of course. So,
of course you did.
Right. So, but back to the, did I ever jump? Yes, I did. As my career progressed and I actually flew jumpers on the weekends as a way to build some time in a DC-3, which is a Douglas carrier DC-3. It's also known as a C-47, the military version. But with all the seats ripped out, we could haul 30 jumpers in the back. And so I was, as a co-pilot, just pulling gear in the DC-3 out of a little grass strip, and we were flying professional jump teams that would roll out 10 men at a time, 10 men and women at a time, and go into formations and so forth. So I got the bug. I was kind of back at home at the airport bar on the weekend, raving to my friends about, oh, I'm flying these jumpers and it's so awesome and we should all go do it. And we did.
Okay.
So there were 8 of us, I think, that went, and it was $30 to pay for your half a day of jump school and one jump. And so we bet each other. And if anybody chickened out, they had to pay everyone else's jump fee. So that was going to be really pricey. Well,
exactly.
Since it was my idea, they sent me up in the first aircraft, although there were 2 of us went up at a time, and we were in a little 4-seat high-wing aircraft, and the back seats are removed, and you're sitting on the floor with your parachute, and there's a little 10-inch square platform welded to the top of the wheel strut outside the door, which is removed. It's just open air. And you're supposed to step out on that strut and hold on until they tell you to fall back and go into your spread eagle position. Well, all day long, all you've been doing is practicing emergencies, basically. I mean, because anybody obviously can fall off the wing of an airplane. So what you're practicing all day before you actually do this is what you're going to do if something goes wrong.
Oh, okay.
So you're quite nervous, okay, what if my chute doesn't open, I have to cut it away, and I have to manually pull out a reserve chute, and you get all this stuff on your brain. Well, I actually, Casey, chickened out. I said,
no.
And they said, now listen, once you get out there under that wing, you can't crawl back in. It's too dangerous, and we will push you off the wing if we have to, because if your chute gets tangled up while you're crawling back in and the D-ring gets pulled, it can take down the whole airplane, da-da-da.
Oh.
So the jump master had me sitting on the edge of the floor with my feet hanging out on that little platform, and the next step was that I was supposed to reach up, grab the wing strut, and pull myself up into a standing position, and then when he slapped me again, I was supposed to let go and go into my spread eagle. Well, I chickened out. I said, you're going to push me now, aren't you? And he said, no, you're not that far out. You don't have to go if you don't want to. And I said, I don't want to. I can't do this. And so we're circling around, and they're making this steep right turn in the direction that I'm hanging out the door, and I'm still thinking he's going to push me. But he didn't. But I looked down, and I saw my six friends down on the ground, six, seven friends, staring up, waiting for me to pop out the door of that airplane. And I said, I turned to him and hollered, because we're hollering over wind noise, can you line me up again? And he said, yeah, are you sure? And I said, yeah. He said, what made you change your mind? And I said, I'd rather die than go back and face them. So the next time around, I did get out under that wing and jump. It wasn't pretty, but I have made one jump, and I never wanted to make another one.
Oh, is that right? You only did one.
I only did one. And, you know, it's beautiful once the chute opens and you know you're safe and you're floating down, but it's that 10 seconds of sheer terror of wondering if it's going to, I guess, that I was not willing to endure again.
Oh, my goodness. Well, did they, I'm sure you told them, or when they were looking up at you, I guess they realized that you had hesitated. And that you maybe chickened out. They were counting their money, I'm sure.
Oh, they were, yes. So that was my experience with, I did get to jump out of an airplane, and I can say I've been there and done that, but that
never
was my
again.
Experience with that. Never again. And that was
okay,
all,
so
we just did anything and everything to build time. So flying the jumpers was a way to build time. I moved on to a better instructor job from the little one that I started with at Lansing Community College.
Okay.
I got some grant money to go there and get my advanced ratings, and at the same time they hired me as an instructor.
Okay.
So I was able to work there, which was a gravy job. It was just the highest paying, most wonderful job a flight instructor could have at that time. So. And a funny thing there was, during the summer when the regular classes weren't in session, we were hired by Michigan State University to give flight training to their cadets, the ROTC cadets, which is, I don't know what the R stands for, but it's an officer training candidate school, and they all got flight training as part of that. So they were looking for volunteer instructors who wanted to work through the summer to train ROTC students, and I did train many ROTC students that went on to become Air Force pilots, which I thought was kind of ironic since I wasn't allowed to be one, but I was allowed to train them.
Absolutely. And so the training consists of the ground training, so it would be a workbook type of thing first? Or did you start off with them in the airplane?
Oh, with the ROTC students, it was all in the airplane, yes.
Okay.
I also did teach ground schools at the college. I did both, but I taught in the airplane all day long. Every semester I would have usually about six students assigned to me that I flew with for an hour or two each day, every day of the week, well, 5 days a week. So it was a great flying job. Yeah, I built a lot of time that way. And then I moved on to haul some freight and build some time in more advanced aircraft. Because the goal at that time is, you know, everybody wanted to be an airline pilot. So my goal was I had to build this time.
Yeah.
Right. So
now,
I did.
How old are we now? How old are you now? Are you about 22, 23?
No, I'm getting up there, 24, let's see. Yeah.
Okay.
Around, 23, 24.
Okay.
And so I got a job flying light aircraft freight. And it was light aircraft, but it was more advanced aircraft. And I did fly a couple of light twins and some light singles. And we hauled, believe it or not, canceled bank checks, because back then it wasn't all done by computer. And we would be racing from the banks in northern Michigan down to Detroit to get all these sacks and sacks of checks to the big banks in downtown Detroit. And you punched a time clock with the with each sack, if they got there before midnight, then they saved a day's interest on all those checks.
Oh.
So I did that for a year or so, and I'm going to tell on myself a story, because everybody always wants to hear about your mistakes. And I'm old enough that I can own them now. While I was flying the canceled bank checks, I went into Detroit City Airport one night, and totally due to my own fault, a few things happened during the approach where they gave me a go-around and then rescinded the go-around, and so I had my gear down and then back up again. But make a long story short here, I landed gear up. No mechanical failure, totally my own mistake. I'm flaring out over the runway, and I'm thinking I've just got the most beautiful flare going in the world, and all of a sudden the sparks are flying, and I'm scraping down the runway.
Oh, no.
And the reason I like to tell this story is it does have a kind of a funny event that's a gender issue. So I'm flipping off switches, and I know that sparks have been flying, and I don't know how much damage has been done to the belly, so I'm quickly getting out of this airplane, and I'm standing forlorn beside it in the middle of the runway now, and out comes the first crash truck with the red light spinning, and he pulls up, and he gets out of the truck, and he looks at me, and he looks at the airplane, and he walks over, and he looks in the cockpit, and he looks back at me, and he says, "Where's the pilot?"
Hi, you and said, Casey, here I am.
No, the devil made me do it. I said, it just suddenly occurred to me, he doesn't believe I could possibly be the pilot. Maybe I can get out of this. And the little devil in me, I looked at him and I said, he took off across that field. And I actually let the man get a few yards out into the field before I called him back and said, no, I'm the pilot. But I thought he deserved it, you know.
Oh, that is too funny. I love that story. I love that story. Yeah. And, you know, for everyone who is in aviation, or if you talk to someone, that's the first thing they ask you, have you ever had any near misses? And as you were saying, you landed with no gear. And I did interject, you know, to us that was a belly landing. So when we're learning about different, when we're learning about different evacuations, that is what, for the audience, is a belly landing. And so I love that story. I think it's a very good one, especially since it was a good ending. So give us a little, bring us up from those are the years of building. If a person was considering to be a pilot, let's see, some of my young audience that's listening, what are some of the fields that you would stress that they excel in or they have to excel in to become a pilot? Is it science and math, or what are the different classes that they really need to excel in?
You know, I was always told you have to be so great in math, and I wasn't. I was great in English and composition and all those things. I hated math, but I wanted to fly badly enough that I could make it happen. Honestly, I think there's a big misconception about what's required to be a pilot, in that you have to be some super math head or egg head, kind of a science geek person. And honestly, I just wanted to fly so badly that I applied myself. And when I got into the training, and we didn't have all the little digital computers that the guys are using now to do their flying calculations and wind correction angles and ground speed versus airspeed and all of those things, it was a matter of memorizing about 8 formulas and learning how to do them, and that was the math I needed to fly. I wasn't a particularly big math head in any other way. Okay. I learned what I needed to fly. That's what I did.
Well, that's encouraging because I've never had anyone say anything different, that math was not one of the things that you had to be one of your strong, you know, qualifications to be, because I always thought that was the case too. And it always looks so complicated with all the different instruments, which we, as you just said, things have really changed. So the calculations and everything, it's a whole different method of flying these days. So let's go from this is all your private. How did you get the job with Ford? I know that that was a large, a big obstacle for you because back in the day, I'm sure they were very hesitant on hiring a female corporate pilot.
They were, and I'm sure that affirmative action had a lot to do with it. I did go on from hauling the small freight to getting a job with a company called Evergreen International Airlines, and that was just a chance thing. I met the chief pilot at a party. I begged him for a job, and he gave me the kind of the blow off and said, yeah, send me a resume. And I did, and thought, they'll never call me. And but something came up a few months later where they had a group of guys all scheduled to go to school on the Convair 580 with, I believe it was Allegheny Airlines at the time, was doing their training for them. And one of the guys dropped out and found a job someplace else, and he needed someone quick at the last minute, and there was my resume, and I got called. So I had a year of time in the Convair 580s, and I started applying. I really was applying with airlines. In fact, I was in the middle of the interview process with United Airlines in early 1977, and somebody had mentioned to me corporate aviation. I really didn't know that much about it, and they said, you ought to try corporate too, and Ford Motor Company's a good one. And so I sent a resume off to Ford, and I had the interview process with United was about six different steps. You got called for the basic interview, and you got called back to take written exams. And so I had done like the first two steps, and Ford called me in the late in 1977, and they interviewed me, and they were aware. I was honest about the fact that I was in the process of interviewing with United, and they said, well, what's going to happen if we don't want to hire you and put all this money into your training and everything, and then have you going to pick up and go as soon as United calls? And I said, you know, you told me that you're going to have me on a year probation, and I said, I'll give you the same year. That's all I can say. I'll give you a year to see how I like you. But what I feel right now is that you have an awesome flight department. It's large and well-established, and it has a strict seniority system where I know I can upgrade. And I think I would like to stay in my home area and be a name instead of a number with a large airline. So if you're everything you say you are, then I promise you that if United calls within the first year, I will not go. That's as much as I'll promise you. And they hired me.
Okay.
United did call, and I did say no, and I ended up spending the rest of my career with Ford.
And that was 16 years, right?
16 years, mm-hmm.
16 years. Now, I want to ask a question. During your interview in that room, were there other women that applied, or were how many women that you know of applied and were never accepted? Because you were the only one for the whole 16 years that they ever hired. Is that correct?
I was the only one. Yes, that is correct, Casey. I was the only one, and that interview was just me. They had just called me in for an interview, and it was way later in my career with Ford when I started pestering them to get more women, and they pretended to care.
Okay.
They said, oh, we just don't get any qualified applicants. Female applicants. I went on my own, Casey, and put an ad in Trade a Plane, I think it was, looking for women, and I put the qualifications in, but I had them phone me. And then I would give them all the information and have them send their resumes to the chief pilot.
Yeah.
And during that time, I also went and I said, you know, there's this organization I was just made aware of called Women in Aviation, and they have this annual conference. And I'll bet if I went there, I could find some female applicants. And they, and they paid for me to go.
Okay.
And I posted things on the bulletin boards, and I met other women, and I just brought them women who were way more qualified than what they'd been hiring as far as male applicants.
Okay.
And so during this whole process, actually just before I went to that conference, I found out that I had a significant illness that was going to cause me to lose my FAA medical. And
okay.
I didn't know for sure at the time. I knew I wasn't going to be flying for a while. But so I went to the conference anyway, and I went on medical leave as soon as I got back, and I started watching it from my sick bed, and I actually heard that I knew they had three slots coming up to hire three pilots, and they hired three men. So it happened at that time that there was a woman in charge of personnel at Ford's Air Transportation Office. It was the first time we'd had a woman in charge of personnel. And I phoned her and I said, "What's going on? I sent all these female applicants and I heard three guys just got hired." And she said, "I don't have anything from female applicants." So the chief pilot was having me have them apply directly to him, and he was throwing their resumes in the desk drawer.
No.
Yes.
Oh, my.
So I filed a formal complaint, and sure enough, she went to work on it. She really put herself out on a limb for it, and actually they let her go. They sent her back to Ford World Headquarters. They didn't want her in that department anymore. But the bird had been let out of the cage, and they did have to hire some women.
Because of you and your energy in trying to recruit, you actually are the reason why other females were hired after that. Had you not investigated, no telling how long that would have gone on.
That's quite possible. I'm sure it would have happened. Hopefully it would have happened at some point, but I like to think I expedited it. And I can't remember the name of the first woman that was hired after me. She didn't stay there very long because she did move on to the airlines. But she was one of the women that I met at the Women in Aviation Conference. But the one I do remember is a lady named Wendy Bradbury Paver. And the reason I remember her is she was one of the second or third women after I was gone that got hired. And the reason I remember her, I'd never met her, but she sent me a letter. She sent me a long handwritten two-page letter, and she'd been talking to some of the other guys on the line, the pilots and co-pilots that flew with me, and they said, "Oh, my God, you wouldn't believe what Karen went through. You just wouldn't believe I won't use the language because you probably want a clean rating for your podcast, but yeah, but you won't believe the stuff she went through." And they told some of the stories. And so Wendy sent me this long letter thanking me for blazing the trail and for enduring what I had endured. Casey, that letter meant so much to me. A few years ago, my uniforms and mementos went to the International Women's Air and Space Museum in Cleveland to go on display. And I was like, I've got all this stuff in the back of my closet. I haven't used it since 1994. And I just sent everything. I sent them my logbooks. I sent them everything except that letter.
That letter meant
so much to me. I made a copy of it and sent it to them. But I couldn't part with that letter. So I would really like to encourage people to contact those who have gone before them when they're aware of it. I know you paved the way for a lot of black female flight attendants, and I don't know if you've had a similar experience of hearing from them and receiving that gratitude, but, you know, I spent so much time pulling my hair out and feeling, wondering why I was staying so long in a place where I felt so unwanted, but that made it all worthwhile, getting a letter like that.
Well, now, how did the men, since you were a captain, I mean, everyone knows the captain is in charge, so the aircraft that you flew, there were two or three other crew members?
The aircraft that I flew, there were two pilots and a flight attendant.
Okay.
And I started out as a co-pilot. And I flew for 10 of those 16 years as a co-pilot, and the last six as a captain. And that was... you know, our upgrade, as I mentioned earlier, was all by seniority. So it would have been extremely difficult for them to pass over me, though they tried.
And that's what I was going to ask you. What is the qualifications of becoming a captain? And so you answered that for me and the audience, that it goes by seniority. So is the average, obviously, the average would be 10 years before you could qualify to be a captain, or is it also seniority and hours?
Well, no, the hours don't matter at all, because once you hire on and you have the qualifications, actually at Ford they did something that not all corporations do, but they required all of us to be captain certified in the aircraft. So within 6 months of hiring on with Ford, I had a type rating in a Convair 580, and I had my airline transport pilot's rating, which is the same rating that airline pilots have to have, and that was required by Ford.
Okay.
And so we had all the ratings, and we actually swapped seats and took turns flying, but the person with the seniority was the one that was actually in charge and that got the bigger paycheck and so forth.
How receptive were the men when they walked on and saw they had a female captain? I'm sure you could share a story with us about that encounter that you would have with the other crew member when he walked on and realized he had a female captain.
Well, it's not such a surprise as it might be with the airlines that you're accustomed to, because we only had 24 pilots. We all knew each other for a long time before I checked out as a captain. So the co-pilots that I flew with were all extremely supportive. Interesting, Casey, I found when I hired in there that I had support from the most senior captains. It was almost a fatherly thing. They would take me under their wing and want me to do well and encourage me and help me and teach me. And the co-pilots seemed to be fine with it, the other male co-pilots. It was this mid-range of captains that seemed so threatened by my presence.
Okay.
And I have speculated from time to time on what that was about. I think when the men that were threatened by a woman being in the cockpit and doing their job is because pilots have been put on pedestals for so long. They're like, God.
Absolutely.
Oh, my
they
God,
are.
You fly an airplane? Oh, my God, you are God. You know, they're like, and so now for these men to have the world see that a girl could do it.
Absolutely.
That was
absolutely
knocking the pedestal out from under them.
I know. I can, you know, we all know that being in aviation, that is one of the things that, as I was saying to you the other day, the pecking order of even just signing in for the hotel. The crew members went first, and the flight attendant sat by the side until the cockpit crew got their key for the rooms, and then the pecking order went down for seniority. But they are.
Right.
They do have that mentality that they are God, and they do have that cockiness that all of us, the whole world, had to adjust to. And some of it, we could say, yes, you deserve to feel and not God, of course, but superior, because that's a lot of responsibility on any person, any pilot. That's a lot of responsibility to fly that aircraft. And as we all know, how fast and how well they can fly the plane depends on whether we all land safely or not. Now, were you ever overwhelmed with that type of – well, you carry cargo most of the time. Is that correct?
No, that's not correct. We carried passengers. I carried Ford executives. We had our Convair 580s that we ran almost like a scheduled airline. We had scheduled flights that went from Detroit to this plant in Cincinnati and that plant in Louisville and so forth, and we carried mostly on those flights mid-level executives that were going down to a plant to troubleshoot or whatever, one of Ford's plants.
Okay.
And then in the jets, I flew Hawker 700s. And these are types of jets that probably don't mean anything to your audience, but I flew corporate jets as well, and that's what the upper-level executives were on. I flew Henry Ford. I flew William Clay Ford. I flew Edsel Ford and, you know, a lot of those people to wherever they needed to go.
Oh.
Now, on the Convairs, we're not an airline So we don't have a lot of handling. At home, when we're leaving Detroit Airport, yeah, we have our ground crew and our maintenance crew, and they load all the bags. But when we get somewhere, the co-pilot gets to go down and crank open the belly compartment and stick a ladder up into the hole and load and unload bags. And one
so
of those...
You
that
had
was
to
me.
Do that. So,
right.
That was really
so,
a physical job.
It was, and boy, you just, if you ever talk to women who are in that circumstance, and you probably encountered some of it, you don't want to say you can't do it because you're a woman. You just
That's
find
right.
the strength and you perform. You just make it happen. You do things that you otherwise would never have done just because you know all the eyes are on you.
Exactly.
And they're waiting to see if that silly girl can do that thing or not. So you
Absolutely.
You just find the brute strength and you do it, and I did it. But as I was talking about those mid-level captains that seemed so threatened by my presence, and one of them was always down there, oh, let me get that. Like he couldn't stand there and watch a woman do this. That was, you know, this. And I always took, there was this gentleman, and I'm like, no, I got this. No, let me get that. And he would do it. Didn't he go back in to the chief pilot and complain that he didn't like to fly with me because he had to load the bags himself?
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah.
I mean, that's stabbing you in the back. Stabbing you in the back.
Right.
Yeah, here you are thinking you were capable and you were willing to do it, and he stepped up, and you at that point were perceiving it as though he was being a gentleman, and then all along he was stabbing you in the back.
Right. Right.
Sabotage.
And I have one. Mhm. Yeah. And once you learn that, you just don't give him your position on the ladder. You just say, no, sorry, Bob, I got this. You know,
exactly.
I'm doing this. You know. So,
exactly.
But and then as a captain, once I got the captain position, there were some real snags getting there when the transition came, because there were people who just didn't want to see it happen. They actually had a sort of a star chamber session about me. They called a pilot's meeting where I was the only one who didn't know about it, and they talked about me. Yeah.
No.
But I did find out about it because, like I said, half of them supported me. And so they all came to me afterwards and said, you're not going to believe what just happened, Karen. So that was the first point, and that was like at the 9 to 10 year mark when I was ready to transition to captain. That was the first time where I went outside of the air transportation office and went to Ford World headquarters personnel, wrote like a 10-page letter telling them everything that had gone on. And I blew the whistle on them, basically, and I took a lot of flack for it, but they had to back off and they had to promote me, and I did my job just fine for 6 years until I got ill. So.
And there we go with discrimination once again. And that was actually a very large lawsuit you could have filed.
I could have. It's not where I wanted to go. I just
exactly.
wanted my job. Right.
Exactly.
Right. But
and
yeah,
you had to prove, you wanted to prove that you were worthy of it. You wanted to prove that women were capable of doing this job. So it became a personal challenge for you, I would think.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah.
Wow. Oh, my goodness. The stories that you get, I'm glad you've given us a few of them, but I know that you have a lot of them. And as you talk about one, I'm sure a lot of the other ones resurface, because I'm sure you forgot a lot of them.
They do. They do. I could, you know, we could go on way past the hour if I got into all my stories, but.
Oh, my goodness. Well, I'm glad that they picked the right person. You know, God has a way of putting the right person in the right place. And with your type of personality and your feistiness, nothing was going to deter you from being able to do what you were doing, because that was your dream. And that's one of the things that when I talk to the kids, the young adults at school, I try to tell them, it's not just being a flight attendant in aviation. You know, aim higher. Go for the pilot. I mean, do what you want to do in aviation, but realize there's so many other wonderful jobs in aviation. And if you have a desire to fly like you did, and then you aimed all the way to becoming an astronaut, I think that's absolutely amazing.
Right, and I took totally the wrong path to become an astronaut, because as it worked out, the civilians who became astronauts had to be doctors and scientists and whatever. They didn't care less about how much flying time I had or anything that was
exactly
of no matter.
Exactly.
But as you know, you touched on something about telling people to aim higher, and you mentioned, you know, be the pilot, not the flight attendant, and that might be true for some, but aim at what's going to make you happy.
Exactly.
If you're going to be happy, don't feel like you have to be the pilot to be successful.
Exactly.
The flight attendant, as we talked the other day when I did the podcast with you, is a very important position, very important safety position. There's way more to it than just being a waitress at 30,000 feet. You know, there's
Absolutely.
Just way more to it than that, and it's a very respectable position. And I actually felt like the most rewarding job I had in my aviation career was as a flight instructor and ground instructor at Lansing Community College. And I often wished, and you can always look at the road not taken, you know, and wonder.
Exactly.
So who knows? If I had taken the other path, I might be saying, oh, gee, I wished I'd gone and become a corporate pilot. But I often thought I could have been very happy to teach aviation my entire life, because I love teaching. I love seeing the faces light up and the lights come on and and signing off a student for solo flight and signing them off to go take their check ride. It was just an amazing, wonderful experience. And I just would encourage people, if that's where you find joy, yes, it's way less money, but weigh it out before you spend your whole life doing something that you think the world is going to see you as more successful if you do that thing. No,
Absolutely.
Lay it out and think of what really makes you happy, because happiness is what's most important.
And then you would do the job well. And every day,
right.
as they always say, yeah, when you have to go to work, it's not a job. I enjoyed, as I said, I never thought about being a pilot, and for the obvious reasons that they said, but I enjoyed doing what I was doing, and flight attendant was it. I enjoyed that. But as I said, you know, talking to the kids, there's so many other rewarding positions in aviation that you do. You just need to investigate it and tailor it to your personality, to your needs and your desires, and pursue it. Just pursue it.
Right, and look for scholarships. I am learning so much since I started doing my Females in Aviation podcast series about the scholarships that are available, and probably many of them were available back when I was struggling and I just didn't know where to look for them. But I did an interview a few months ago. There's an organization called Women in Corporate Aviation, and they sponsor scholarships, all kinds of scholarships at the beginner level, and they do not limit them to women. They're men or women can qualify for them. But they have scholarships for not just flying positions, but they do have flight attendant training to teach this. Women can go to school, or men, to learn how to be a corporate flight attendant. They have dispatch training schools for dispatchers, for maintenance, aviation maintenance. They sponsor all kinds of things. And, you know, that's a place young people need to know that there are all kinds of scholarships out there that are not the traditional ones that you find through colleges.
That's a good point. I'm glad you said that. And once again, let's have a little shout-out for your podcast. What day are you on, and how can my audience find your podcast? Because you have interesting topics also.
Well, thank you, Casey. My podcast is not on at a specific time. It's not a live radio blog like yours is. So I record my podcasts. I edit them, so I can take out all my own errs and ahs and mistakes. And you can't do that now because this is live.
No.
But,
yes.
No. So my podcasts are pre-recorded, and the name of my podcast is Females in Aviation Past and Present. You can find them. There are two different ways to get to them. One is www.femalesinaviation.com. That will take you to a list of all my podcasts. Right at the top of the list right now is one for Casey, the Fly Girl, because you're the most recent one I did. So if they would go to that web address right now, they'd find a podcast about you as well as all the previous ones I've done. The other way to get to my podcasts is to go into iTunes, itunes.apple.com, and then get into the podcast section and just type in Females in Aviation Past and Present, and that will take you to a list of my podcasts. They are all free downloads. This is not a profit-making venture. Everything's free. Even with it being on iTunes, you don't pay for it. They're free downloads.
Oh, well, thank you. That was wonderful information, and I will also put that on my website, so for those that listen to it, they'll have it and be able to get that information. Because I think it's really, really interesting, the part about the scholarships. I also belong to the Black Pilots Association, and they offer different scholarships. So for those that would be or are interested in aviation, there's so many different ways to investigate. And as you just gave another avenue, I really appreciate that, and I think that they should really investigate that too.
Right. I have to date 18 podcasts on that page. I started them last July, and I've done 18 of them. And I think at least 4 or 5 of them are with organizations that offer scholarships. So they can scroll through that list, too. If they're looking for anything aviation-related, there are just many organizations. The 99s is an organization of female pilots, and they started out with Amelia Earhart, and there were 99 of them that came to the first meeting. So the 99s have scholarship. The Women in Aviation International have scholarships. The Women in Corporate Aviation have scholarships. There's a International Women's Air and Space Museum in Cleveland. That's where my uniform and stuff is displayed. And they do all sorts of fundraisers and help young people. They have something where they do like a summer camp for young people, young girls, you know, to get maybe sample flight rides and so forth and see what aviation is all about. So, yeah, there's just so much out there for people.
And I'm glad we have to always post or either, you know, let people know where these different sources are. I spoke at the International Women Air and Space Museum in November, I believe.
Oh, good.
Yeah. And I wish I had known you then. I would have gone. I did do a little tour of the museum, and it really is doing a lot of wonderful things that you said. And that camp, they should be really, I guess, trying to get applicants for that camp sometime soon. So people should go on the internet and look that up and find out what the qualifications are to attend the camp.
Right, right. If they're in the Cleveland area especially, that's an easy thing to get to. And it seems to me like they have one, too, that's like a mother-daughter. So the moms can get out and experience aviation as well.
Oh, man, that's wonderful. That's wonderful. Well, I tell you, I told you that this hour would go by quickly, and it has.
It has. It's been fun.
It has, and I enjoyed all of that, the information you gave me. I sat here with my mouth open, and I was in aviation for 35 years. But the thrill of how it must feel to be in charge and to fly a plane and just to soar, it has just to be a feeling that it's just something you just can't describe.
It is indescribable, and Casey, I think you should still do it. It's never too late. You said you're still thinking about getting out and taking a few lessons. I think you go try that. At least get yourself to solo flight. It's just a blast.
Yes, I am going to do that. I am going to take a class. I know that. I'm like you with the parachuting. You know, it sounds good until you get there, and then you say, well, maybe not. So I don't know how far I'll get.
Yeah, and you know what? The thing, you mentioned something earlier about the cockpit looking so complicated, like there's just so much there. But when you start flying, you're in a very small, usually a two-place aircraft, and there aren't a whole lot more gauges in there than there are in your car. A few episodes, you know, and you learn how to use them. And then you go to an airplane that's a little bigger, and there's another instrument, and there's maybe everything's double because there's 2 engines now instead of 1, or there's 4 engines instead of 2. And so it's a building process. You know, so young people don't look into the cockpit of a 747 and go, "Oh my God, I could never do that." Don't go there. Don't go there. You know, and all the stuff that's up overhead, it's just a bunch of circuit breakers, and they're all labeled. You know, it's just like walking into your basement and opening the panel and seeing which circuit breaker goes to the kitchen garbage disposal because it's not working. It's just not as complicated as it looks because you build to it slowly.
Well, I love those words of encouragement because you took the fear out of me and becoming so overwhelmed, because I would go to the cockpit and I was overwhelmed with all the buttons, and I would think, boy, you really, really, really have to be a sharp person to do this. And so when you've taken it and broken it down into smaller increments, it isn't as threatening and as intimidating as I was feeling before I met you and before you broke it down. I think those are wonderful words.
I hope the pilots out there don't hate me, but that pedestal is not as difficult to get on as some people want to make you think.
Well, I think move over. Here I come.
Oh, good, good.
Yes. So with that, I am going to close the show, and I want to thank you so much for taking your time and giving my audience something interesting, something new, and something enlightening for their day, and for possibly for those young kids, their career, some insight. So let's aim high and fly high.
Very well put. Thank you so much for having me. It's been fun, Casey.
Thank you so much, and we will be signing off, and thank you for joining me today. As I said, this is the Fly Girl Show, and I am so excited that my guest was Karen Hopkins, and we had a wonderful show. I hope that you did learn something new. I hope that you will go on to her podcast and get some of the information as to where you can obtain some scholarships for those that are interested in aviation. I think she gave us a very good source of information for that. So with that, I am going to sign off, and it was a pleasure, and I hope once again that you will have a wonderful, wonderful new year. And once again, remember that I am on every Wednesday from 11 to 12, that is Central Standard Time, and the call-in number is 347-857-3609. And I would love to hear your comment, or go on my website, listen to my podcast, and comment. Let me know what you would like to hear or what subject you would like me to cover. So with that, I'd like to say have a wonderful, wonderful day. And remember, your blessings are as numerous as the stars in the sky. This is Casey Grant, your host. Have a wonderful day.